Hey everyone, welcome to the Frontline Community Church podcast. My name is Jared, and I'm the group's resident here at Frontline in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Our mission is simple, to see zero people unchanged by Jesus. And so whether you've been following Jesus your whole life or your journey has just begun, we hope that this message will help you draw near to the person of Jesus, be challenged and encouraged by his word, and be moved to action. We hope these next few moments are a blessing to you and equip you to see who God really is and who you are in him.
Good morning, my friends. Man, it's so good to be with you again. If you're watching with us online, it's great to have you in the room with us as well. If I haven't had the chance to meet you yet, my name is Brian, and I serve as the senior pastor of the Zero Collective Network. And so Zero Collective is this network family of churches here throughout the greater Grand Rapids area that Frontline is not only a part of, but you guys are really, Frontline was what began it all and started it all. And so it's just such a joy for me. My family and I still call Frontline home. And every time I get to be here with you guys, it's just such a gift. I want you to know last week, Easter was an incredible time. We saw people give their lives to Jesus across the entire Zero Collective last week, which is just an awesome thing. And we should give God some praise for that. That's an awesome thing. So yeah. That's why we're doing this network. It's why we do this. It's why you hear the word zero everywhere in the vision of Frontline, because we're not done until there are zero lives living unchanged by Jesus. And so we're looking at this series right now, looking at Psalm 23. When my older two boys were younger, when they were like in elementary age, school age, it was in the middle of February and it was a snow day. We got like a foot of snow dumped on us. You remember when that used to happen? And school was canceled the next morning. So I was looking for something to do with my boys to get them out of the house. And so I decided to take them to the zoo here in town, in John Ball Zoo. So I load up in the car and we go there, and I forgot that the zoo is closed in the winter. So we get out of the car and I'm like, oh no. But I was saved when my son Andrew, our second son, noticed that Loch Ness monster thing from Art Prize right there in the front of John Ball Zoo. How many of you remember when that thing was there? For those of you who are not familiar with Grand Rapids, there was this thing, we call it Nessie. It's this Loch Ness monster piece that was a part of Art Prize. And this is an actual picture of it. They moved it to the John Ball Zoo and it was there for many years. Now, notice in this picture, it's in the middle of a pond, right? You see that? So on this particular day, there's a foot of snow on the ground, and my son Andrew spots it. Look, there's that Loch Ness monster thing. You couldn't see the pond. You just saw snow everywhere. And so we just run out there. We run out to the Loch Ness monster. We're playing on it. We're touching it. We're having a snowball fight next to it. And all of a sudden, Andrew notices this sign right there, and he says, "Dad, what does danger mean?" And I looked at it and I said, oh, that doesn't say danger. It says danger, thin ice. And suddenly it dawns on me, oh, that's right. There is a pond out here. That's what this thing is in. There's like a foot of snow and underneath that is pure ice. And so here's the thing about that. We weren't intending to do something wrong. We weren't meaning to do something bad. It's just that we believed something that wasn't true. We believed it was safe. We believed it was going to be fun. And that's what led us out there on that ice. And then Andrew noticed another sign that was sitting right there, and the sign said, "Do not touch," talking about, Nessie. And so he goes, "Dad, what does that sign say?" And so I told him, I said, "It says, do not tell your mother about any of this. Now get in the car." So we got in the car and we got out of there. Here's what I would tell you. Underneath every single sin that we commit in our lives, underneath every single act of disobedience against God that happens in our lives is a lie that we've believed. And what we're doing this month and over the next few weeks is we're looking at Psalm 23, this great psalm that describes the relationship that we have with God as our shepherd, with God as our father. And every week we're looking at a different verse, and we're allowing, verse by verse, we're allowing this psalm to speak to and to confront the lies that we believe about our lives and about our relationship that we have with God. That's what we're doing. And so the verse that we're gonna look at today is, maybe you're familiar with Psalm 23, maybe you're new to the Bible. We started out last week with the very first verse, and we're gonna skip to verse 4 today. Don't worry, we're gonna come back to verse 2 and 3 and everything. It'll be a little bit out of order, but verse 4 says this, and it's a pretty familiar, well-known verse. Psalm 23, 4 says, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That's the truth of what we're looking at today. That's the verse we're going to look at today. Now, here's what's interesting about this. If you have read Psalm 23, or even if you were just with us last week at Easter, well, Psalm 23 starts out as this beautiful psalm. It's describing our relationship with God, where we understand that God is our shepherd and we are his sheep. So it says, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. And then the next couple of verses, verse 2 and 3, describe he leads me on these wonderful paths for his namesake. He leads me beside green pastures and still waters. That just sounds awesome. I mean, I read that and I'm like, I'm up for that. Some of you are just coming back from Florida where there are some green pastures and some still waters. I'm envious of you. Like, we want that, right? We're like, yes, I am down to clown, please. Green pastures, still waters, restores my soul. That all sounds great. And then suddenly you get to verse 4, and it's like it takes this abrupt right turn. And it says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, wait a minute, how did I get here? If God's my shepherd, and he wants to lead me by green pastures, by still waters, all these good things. Maybe you've even asked about your own life, your own Christian life, if you're following Jesus. How did I end up here? That's the question I want us to wrestle with this morning. Go ahead, if you will. If he is leading me, then how could I end up in the valley of the shadow of death? How is that possible? How did I wind up in that spot? Here's what I would tell you. Every single one of us in this room, every single one of us watching online, whether you have a relationship with God or not, every one of us has what I'm just going to call for this message, a theology of suffering. And by that, what I mean, a theology of suffering, I mean that we all have things that we believe about God when we suffer. Even if you don't call yourself a Christian, that we have things that we believe about God when we find ourselves in a valley. And for most, if you are a Christian, for most Christians, what our theology of suffering sounds like is we say, well, you know, if God is leading me, if he has good plans for me, and if he's, you know, if I'm following him, that I would never have to go through a valley. I'll just find my way around a valley. I'll fly over the valley with Jesus' power. Somehow I'm just gonna float over it. That's usually what our theology of suffering is. I have, over the years that I've been a pastor, I have met so many people who have said something like this. They've said, you know, I grew up in church. I used to believe in God, but then I walked away from church. I'm an atheist now. I don't believe in God anymore. I don't believe that. And whenever I ask, well, what happened? What changed? What led to you, you know, kind of walking away? They will say something like, well, I was believing in God and everything, but then my brother got cancer and died. Or my spouse filed for divorce. Or I got fired from my job completely unjustly. Or I got a diagnosis or whatever it is. Something unfair, something awful happened. What they describe is a valley. And in that valley, what they're saying is, really, I trusted God, just like we were just singing about, and somehow he let me down in the valley. I've also met an equal number of people who have come to this church, even here at Frontline, and who have come and they've put their faith and their trust in Jesus. They've gotten baptized. And when I ask them their story, I say, how did you find God? How did you meet God? Or how did you make your way back to Christ? They will describe some kind of a valley. They'll literally say, well, I went through this really dark time in my life. My spouse filed for divorce. My brother got cancer and died. There was something awful that happened. I lost my job unexpectedly. And somehow those people found the shepherd of Psalm 23 in the valley. That's where they met God and were drawn back to him. Isn't that interesting? So my question is, what's the difference between the people who lose their faith in the valley and the people who find their faith in the valley? What's the difference? Here's what I would tell you. For the people who lose their faith when they go through a valley, those people almost always have believed a lie. And here's the big lie that we're talking about this morning that we're allowing this verse to confront in our lives. The lie we tend to believe when we go through a valley is I am completely alone here. I must be completely alone here in this valley. That's the explanation that we come to. There are few places in our lives where lies can take root like the valley. Trauma, rejection, heartache, loss. Those kinds of experiences, when we go through them, sort of those become open wounds through which the enemy oftentimes wants to enter our lives and speak lies to us about how alone we must be here in the valley. And oftentimes, you know, we find ourselves, it's like the valley that we're walking through is bad enough, but then when we begin to believe the lie that we're all alone here in the valley, it's like things go from bad to worse to worse to worse. You know what I'm saying? Because oftentimes when we believe that lie, when we're going through something, is we begin to respond by pulling back from others, from God. We isolate ourselves. We distance ourselves from community. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like if I believe that I'm utterly alone when I'm going through something really difficult, then I choose to be alone. I choose to, you know, exit relationships. If I believe that lie, it's like I act on it and I begin to actually choose to be alone more and more and more. You see that? I mean, that would describe so many people in our world. And even, I would say, so many people in the church. So what does Psalm 23 invite us to do? What Psalm 23 invites us to do is it invites us to walk through the valley with God, with Him. That's a choice. You can choose to let Him be with you when you walk through the valley. In fact, one of my favorite parts, one of my favorite things that scholars talk about with this psalm is that for the first three verses of Psalm 23, it's all in the third person. We see that even in our language, right? It's describing God as the shepherd. He is my shepherd. He does this. He does that. He leads me beside still waters. He leads me to green pastures. He restores my soul. He does this. He does this. And then in verse 4, when it starts talking about the valley of the shadow of death, suddenly it switches and it begins to speak for the rest of the psalm in second person. You are with me. Your rod, your staff, they comfort me. Suddenly the language, when you get to verse 4 and you start talking about the valley, suddenly the language becomes very intimate, very personal. David, the psalm writer, is literally speaking suddenly directly to God. It's like God just draws right near as soon as we get to that part about the valley of the shadow of death. The invitation is to walk through the valley with God. So that's the question I want to ask you. You think about whatever valley it is that you're going through in your life right now. Are you walking through the valley with God? Are you doing that? Are you walking through the valley with God? Here's what I would tell you. I would say there are, for our purposes this morning, I'm going to talk about three different ways that we try not to have to walk through the valley with God. When we're going through suffering, where we're going through trauma, rejection, heartache, loss, whatever it is. And this is not exhaustive. We could probably have 10 ways that we do it. But for our purposes today, I want to talk about three specific ways that we often try not to have to walk through the valley with God. Okay, so first, are you walking through the valley with God, or are you trying to, number one, are you trying to avoid the valley? Are you just trying to avoid the valley? And what do I mean by avoid the valley? Oftentimes, our world, especially in the West, we are so good at it. Oftentimes, we try to grasp control when we're going through a valley by basically trying to kind of move through our grief really fast, to deny our feelings, to not be honest with ourselves or with others about how we're really doing, how we're feeling. When people ask us, how are you doing? We say, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm always fine. There's never any other answer. And we try to move through so quickly that we don't have to lament. We don't have to grieve. We don't have to experience those things. And what we often try to do is we try to find the next thing to celebrate. Like when we're in the middle of a valley, we just try to avoid the valley by saying, I'm just gonna try to find something where I can just celebrate. But here's what I would tell you. Any celebration that has not been through suffering is cheap celebration. And it ends up feeling shallow and doesn't really deliver on what it promises. Think about, I mean, I could give you so many examples, but think about like pop songs that you hear, you know, they get on the charts and become popular. If you think about it, the message of every single pop song that comes and goes Basically, the message is, you know, just stick your head in the sand and just go crazy, you know, dance the night away, you know, and just throw your hands in the air and just wave them around like you just don't care. You know, there is no Ukraine. There is no collapsed bridge in Baltimore. You know, when the bad feelings come, you'll just shut up and dance harder. Shut up and dance with me, you know, whatever it is. Think about, like, that's the message of every pop song out there. And the problem with that is it ends up feeling meaningless. It ends up feeling shallow because it's celebration that hasn't been through suffering. And that's why those songs don't endure. But think about some of the hymns of the church that we sing. Think even some of the ones that we sang this morning. Hymns that have endured for centuries, that for some reason we continue to sing them. Think about the hymn, "I'll Fly Away." Even if you didn't grow up in church, that hymn has been in movies. It's been everywhere in our culture. And at first glance, that hymn, "I'll Fly Away," it sounds like one of those, just, you know, dance the night away, throw your hands in the air and wave them all around. It sounds like one of those, doesn't it? Here's what we know about that hymn. That hymn originated as a black spiritual from the era of American slavery. And what we know is that it, in its original form, it was written by a female slave, a young woman. So imagine, if you can, a young woman, a slave, and her husband and her young children have just been sold to another plantation. And so they have been ripped away from her, and she knows she will probably never, ever see them again. And so the next morning, she's out in the fields, and she begins singing this melody that's based in a kind of joy that's on the other side of suffering. "Some bright morning, when this life is over, I'll fly away. To a land where joy will never end, I'll fly away." See, that is a kind of joy and a kind of celebration that has been through suffering. And that's why we still sing it today. That's why it's endured over all these generations and decades and people groups. And that's what God wants to do. He wants to lead us through the valley to where the real joy is. He wants to lead us through the valley because he knows that any kind of joy that's real joy, that's going to be lasting joy, that's going to be meaningful joy that sticks with us, that can't be taken away from us, is the joy we experience when we've walked with him through the valley to the other side. That's real celebration. That's real joy. And there is no counterfeit for it in this world. Are you walking through the valley with him? Or are you trying to avoid it? Secondly, are you walking through the valley, or are you trying to medicate yourself through the valley? These two are related for sure, but they're slightly different. If you think about what we do oftentimes when we're going through a valley, is we seek anything that will give us some sort of temporary relief from the valley we're going through. Some way to medicate ourselves, some way to basically just have to get some distance from it, numb out, you know, entertainment, escape, anything that will help us just kind of take a step away. And I would say this is the root of where all unhealthy addictions come from. Now, oftentimes, immediately when we say this, where our brains go is we go, okay, well, we're talking about drugs and alcohol and things like pornography. And certainly absolutely, that fits in there. We oftentimes will go to those things, and they do become addictions when we medicate ourselves with them. But it can be anything in our lives. It can be binging Netflix. It can be scrolling endlessly on social media. Or even think about our relationship with food. Think about, like, you know, what happens, you know, when we get into this place in the valley and we begin, like, stress eating. Are you just eating your feelings? Yes, but they're delicious, right? This is one for me. It doesn't feel like a joyful celebration when it's 11 p.m. at night and I'm choking down an entire jar of peanut butter. That's what I do, literally. Here's what I've learned about my life. When I get into one of these patterns where that's what I'm doing, it's late at night and I'm like, for whatever reason, it's always peanut butter. I'm eating peanut butter late at night. 100% of the time, it is always because I am avoiding something. That's the truth. I have learned to, like, ask that question. When I find myself doing that, it's like, put down the jar of peanut butter. What am I avoiding? Because there's always something. There's something I'm avoiding having to deal with or feel or a conversation I know I need to have, or something. Oftentimes what we do is we find some way to medicate ourselves when we're going through the valley to provide some sort of like temporary numb out and relief. But the problem with it is it doesn't lead to any kind of real healing. It really doesn't help us move through the valley at all. And the invitation of the shepherd is, I want to be with you. I want to walk through the valley with you. Are you walking through the valley with him? Or are you trying to avoid the valley? Are you trying to medicate yourself through the valley? And this last one is kind of counterintuitive. But are you trying to prevent the valley through prayer? And again, this one seems like a good thing at first, right? At least this one involves going to God and praying, right? Like I'm in the valley, I'm not just sort of ignoring God, I'm actually turning to him and praying. But oftentimes what we will do when we experience a valley time in our lives is we will cry out to God and we'll just basically, our prayers are, God, will you just prevent this valley from happening? Will you prevent me from having to enter this and go through this at all? But the question I'd love to ask you is, what if the valley is where he is? What if the valley that you're going through is the very place where he wants to meet you? And you're doing everything you can to prevent it and asking him to prevent it. See, a lot of times what we think is, you know, we look at the broken places of our lives. We look at the, you know, the distorted places of our lives, the places where we're hurting. And we think, I got to get that out of the way. I got to put that over here and compartmentalize it so then I can go to the house of the Lord and meet with God. And what I'm telling you is over and over again in scripture, what we see is God says, no, no, no. It's that place, that broken place, that hurting place. That's where I'm at. That's where I want to meet you. That's where I want to be with you. That's where I want to do my healing work. And oftentimes that's not what we're doing. We're praying and we're saying, God, will you prevent those bad things from happening? I do it. It's not a bad thing to do. It's not wrong. You know, I'll tell you what I'm praying for right now. So I asked my son if I could have permission to share this. So about 3 weeks ago, our son Andrew, who's 21 now, had a massive seizure in our home. That's never happened before. It was awful. He lost consciousness, wasn't breathing when we got downstairs, bit his tongue, chipped his teeth. We had to call the paramedics. And at the hospital late that night, they ruled out all the worst stuff it can be, you know, like brain tumors, and he doesn't have any of that kind of stuff. But 3 weeks later, we have no idea why. Still don't have any idea why. They're going to run more tests and try to figure it out. A couple months from now, Andrew is supposed to move out of our house and get married. This is supposed to be the happiest time of his life. It's supposed to be this time of celebration. His life, he can't drive right now because he had a seizure and they're not sure if he's going to have another one. They're trying to figure all that out. And instead of it being like the happiest time of his life, there's this big question mark. You know what I want God to do? I want God to prevent my son from ever having a seizure again. That's what I want. This past week where it was my 6-month CT scans, I've been honest with you over the years about that. I was in 2015 diagnosed with a form of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Every 6 months, even after going through treatment, every 6 months I have to go in and get these full body CT scans. And the results of that came back this week. And praise God, I'm really happy to share with you. There is no progression of the disease. I'm still in remission. And so I'm just praising God for that. And I just want to say, yeah. And I want to say thank you to you. There's so many of you who've been on that journey with us and with our family. And I know you prayed for me and you say it and it means so much. You have no idea. And I know your prayers and my prayers right now, and they will continue to be, is God, will you prevent the cancer from ever coming back? That's what, even though, you know, the doctors tell me that they expect at some point in the future this to come back and that I'm going to have to go through some more treatment at some point in the future, whatever. My prayers, despite that, are like, God, will you just prevent it? I know that's how many of you are praying for me, and that's how, there's nothing wrong or bad with praying prevent prayers. I'm praying that God would prevent my son from ever having a seizure again. I'm praying that the cancer will never come back for me. There's nothing wrong with that. But the shepherd of Psalm 23 that we are introduced to in the text is not introduced to us as a preventer of bad things. He is introduced to us as a savior who is with us and who can redeem whatever we go through. Do you know him like that? Is that who he is to you? Do you have him at the center of your life like that. Because that's what he wants to be. He says, I want to be with you. In fact, that's the promise that confronts the lie that we're all alone in the valley. The promise is you are with me. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. But what we learn is that when we walk through the valley with God, we discover there is no evil to fear, because the truth is he is with us. And if he is with us, whatever we go through has no power over us ultimately. We have nothing to fear. There's a lot more I could say. I actually had more in my notes. But even as I was praying through this last night, I felt like the Lord called me just to kind of end this by focusing in on one last piece of this verse. I love the fact about this verse that it calls it the valley of the shadow of death. It's the valley of the shadow of death. Why is it the shadow of death? It's because for those of us who know Christ and have put our faith and our trust in Jesus and asked him to be Lord of our lives, that's all death can ever be for us. It's just a shadow. Well, how is that possible? The reason that it's only a shadow of death for us when we know Jesus is because Jesus took the real thing. He encountered death head on. Jesus experienced the God-forsakenness and aloneness on the cross that we deserve. He cried out on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? So that we would never have to cry that out, so that we would never have to experience being alone in the valley. He experienced that on our behalf so that when we know him, we never have to say that. We have the God who walks with us through the valley of the shadow of death, who is with us no matter what. So again, the question is, are you walking with him through the valley? As we turn this to ourselves, the final statement I want to leave you with is this one. You can have control or his presence, but you don't get to have both. You've got to choose. You can have control by trying to do these things, by trying to avoid the valley and just find some other way to celebrate. You can try to have control by medicating yourself through whatever it is you're going through. You can have control by trying to just beg God to prevent you from ever having to go through the valley. Or you can welcome him in and say, God, I just need you with me in this, because I know that whatever I go through, you've got the power to redeem it. And that ultimately the battle's already been won, like we've already been singing about this morning. You either get that, you either get his abiding presence with you that can overcome and conquer everything, or you can have control. You don't get to have both. And oftentimes when we're grasping control, it's just because we're believing the lie, I'm already alone. This is all on me. I'm the one who's got to figure this out. And nothing could be further from the truth. You're only as alone as you choose to be. Those of you online, you're only as alone as you choose to be. I love what Elizabeth Gilbert said. She said, you're afraid of surrender because you don't want to lose control, but you never really had control. All you had was anxiety. That to me just describes so many of us. We think we get control, but we don't. We just get more and more anxiety. And what a needless thing when what we could have is his presence. I'm telling you, it's better than anything else. It's better even than him preventing the valley. So let's close in prayer this morning. Would you bow with me? I wonder if you'll just do this. Think about whatever valley you're walking through right now. I want you to close your fists just as tightly as you possibly can, to the point where you almost just like feel your fingernails digging into your hands. And I want you to think about that valley, think about that place where you're believing that lie that you're all alone and that it's all on you and you've got to just grasp for whatever control you can have. Now I want you just to begin to release your grip and open your hands slowly. Allow the blood flow to continue to go into your fingers. Jesus, that's what we're doing right now. That's the posture of our hearts before you. We recognize that you are the shepherd. God, we want green pastures. We want still waters. We want paths of righteousness for your name's sake. That's what we want. But what we want even more than those things is you with us. And if that means the valley is where you are, then that's where we're going. And we ask you to meet us there. Because we know you have the power to redeem whatever it is that we go through. So we release control. We surrender our lives to you. And we just say, meet us in this place, Jesus. You're the one who has it all figured out. You're the one who has the ultimate authority. You're the one who took death head on so that all we have to face is the shadow. And we know that you know the way. You know the path through it. The only way out, the best way out, is through with you. And so we just trust you in that and ask you to meet us there. And we know that that's enough. In Jesus' name, everyone said.
We hope this message encouraged you in seeing who God is and who you are in him. If you want to take a next step, visit frontlinegr.com/next. We look forward to connecting with you there, and we'll see you back here next week.